profession in the world can't get you a job if there aren't jobs. As the young take the lonesome trail, they leave behind what is in effect fast becoming a non-viable society.
My generation can't afford houses. My generation can't afford to have children. My generation are either leaving the country or jumping in rivers. That's my generation, man.
It is Irish landlords who are evicting Irish people onto the streets and making them homeless. What we do have here is what our president has called is a social catastrophe.
It was when I left Ireland that I realised, like, how Irish I was and, like, how culturally Irish I was. And I guess, like, how much the lens through which I saw the world, you know, was kind of, like, rooted in my Irishness. It's been a long journey, but I've really rehabilitated, like, my relationship, like, with Ireland and, like, kind of with my own Irishness.
I bet you like drink.
How else are we going to cope?
I know. How else can we stick your f***ing stupid questions?
Why do you think English people know so little about Ireland?
Ignorance built into our culture. Always from the start of time, from they fucking started taking over every country in the world, they refused to learn their history and refused to come to terms with. Why do you guys love potatoes so much? That's not even a stupid question. They're great.
I love potatoes.
They're fucking great.
Leprechauns. St. Patrick introduced leprechauns into this country to eat all the snakes. And when was the last time you've seen a snake around here? Never.
I just lay low, I can't lay back. All my anxious voices, it was way back. And I lost my youth, I want a way back. And the walls to be, I wanna break that. All the fakeness, I don't play that. Hit the waves that they chat. Try to pull me on the same track. No way, lad.
Diachiv, Facha, Conis Atatu, welcome to Unfool More. This is a brand new show and really a test episode of a show that I've been thinking about for a while. This is going to be a meandering journey of reflection, discussion, listening, based around, I guess, my experience, but also the experiences of others, of being in Irish diaspora and looking at our current cultural moment as people in diaspora, not as Irish people, and thinking about our current moment and post-colonial identity, I suppose. I want to collect my thoughts before I get further into it, so I'm going to share a song with you while I do that. So we're going to be listening first to a track by an artist, Patrick or Pecker Dunn. He's an Irish musician and Shanachí, which is a traditional storyteller, but also story keeper. Shanachís have a long history in Ireland, and I'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. But Dunn was born in County Mayo, but did live in multiple different parts of Dublin. He's from a traveller family, and they were originally from Wexford. And eventually he ended up living in Dublin in Drimna. So he's been all around the country. He's unfortunately passed away about, just over a decade ago now in 2012. But he is remembered as one of Ireland's best banjo players, a really highly respected musician in Ireland and in the traveller community there. So we'll take a listen to a track by Pecker Dunn. So the track we're going to take a listen to here for our first song of An Fuaim Mór is Wexford by Pecker Dunn. And you'll hear more from me in just a few minutes. Keep tuned. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
My family lived in Wexford town, stopped travelling and settled down. Tommy father kept a horse and car, oh, we lived within the town. The people there misunderstood, oh, they did not know our ways. So with horse and car back on the road, I began my travelling days. My father was called the Fiddler Dunn, and I'm a fiddler too. Although I often felt his fist, oh, he taught me all he knew. I know I'll never be as good, and yet I feel no shame for the other things my father taught. I am proud to bear his name. He taught me pride and how to live, though the road is hard and long, and how a man will never starve with a banjo, fiddle or a song, and how to fight for what I own and what I feel is right, and how to camp beside a ditch on a stormy winter's night. Oh, times were good and times were bad, and people cruel and kind. But what I learned of people then has stayed within my mind. I'll honor friends with all my heart, do for them all I can. But I've learned to go the road again where the spurn a tinker man. Oh, Wexford is a town I like, but a travelling man they scorn. And a man must feel affection for the town where he was born. I know one day that I'll go back when my travelling days are done, and people will begin to wonder what has happened to the Peckerdon.
Once I courted a pretty fair maid, and she was handsome, tall and young, until at length I did discover that she had a false and fluttering tongue. If I had have loved her, foolish would I be, but love will never, never conquer me. And honour anyone will make a draw or keep me from my flowing bowl. When I am single, single I am free, love will never, never conquer me. Get some riches, and I might have to take a wife, but we would fight for the old britches, and she would lead a terrible life. But boys, no, this never could be, for love will never, never conquer me. And honor anyone will make a draw, keep me from my flowing bowl. When I am single, single I am free, and love will never, never conquer me. An ocean, and I might cross the ocean wave to where I could die without emotion, and these last words put above my grave: here lies a youth who never was tied to any old nag or scolding bride. Follow, and I am single, single I am free, and love will never, never conquer me. And none or anyone will make a throw or keep me from my flowing bowl. When I am single, single I am free, and love will never, never conquer me.
Welcome back. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people on the Point Grey campus of UBC. If unceded is an unfamiliar term to you, it means stolen. The land that UBC is located on is stolen land. It continues to be stolen. And there continues to be a massive amount of work on UBC's part to address that reality and work towards reparations and land return to the Musqueam people. If you've just tuned in and you missed the first couple of minutes of the program today, this is a test episode of a new program that I've been thinking about for quite a while. It's called An Fuam Mór, which means the great sound. Not much else to say about that other than it felt like a good name. But the goal of this is to be a space to talk about diasporic Irish experiences and identity. I guess so for context about who I am and why I've decided to start this show, I'm going to be a bit suspicious and not share my human name with you because I want this space to be... I feel less tied to, I guess... my anxieties when I'm not using my own name. So my name is going to be Oisin for the purposes of this show. Some true history about myself. I grew up between Vancouver and Dublin, where my grandfather is. My mom grew up in Dublin and moved here in 86, I believe. And I lived with my grandfather in Dublin for a month of every year until I was 15 years old. So my experience of Ireland has been massively influential to the person that I've become. And that's really an important part of how I navigate the world. It impacts how I think about like spirituality, religion, society. It's informed who I am as a person. And I think it's an interesting space to talk about this diasporic experience. And I know there's a growing Irish community in Vancouver. When my mom moved here, there was a much smaller community and a much less diverse Irish community in Vancouver. And that's changed massively. A continued part of Ireland's global identity is that its largest and most consistent export is its people. And that continues today for many, many reasons, one of them being the many failures of the Irish government and the Irish state to provide resources and supports for people who live in Ireland. So there's a lot of incentive for Irish people and particularly young Irish people to leave. And that's totally understandable and grateful that a lot of them have ended up here. So... I told you a little bit before our musical break there that we'd be listening to a track by Pecker Dunn, who is a now, unfortunately, sadly, deceased Irish artist from the Traveller community who is also a Shanachie. So I want to give a little bit of context about what a Shanachie is. What does that mean? Now, I'm not by any means a cultural historian or particularly well-versed on any of this, but... what I can share from my own personal knowledge mixed with the Wikipedia page for the Shanachie is I can tell you that it's a long-standing Gaelic tradition. So there is a tradition of Shanachie not only in Ireland but also in Scotland. So it's part of Gaelic or what would have been considered a larger like umbrella Gaelic culture. And Shanachies function as storytellers but also historians. And I really appreciate the way that whoever wrote this Wikipedia page has titled them, which is an oral repository, which sounds really sanitized, but I think it's a fun way of approaching the concept of a Shanachie, because they're not only people who, you know, remember and share stories, but their role historically has been to continue to hold on to and pass down genealogies, literature, laws. They are stories that Shanachies collect often are combined stories of culture, law, history, mythology, and they carry an immense amount of knowledge through those stories. The tradition of the Shanachie is slowly unfortunately starting to die out. I think that it will never fully die out. I really believe that, particularly in our current cultural moment, as young Irish people, there's an intense desire to revive like parts of Irish culture, like storytelling, like reviving musical traditions, returning to speaking the Irish language. So I think that the tradition of the Shanachí will continue to exist. However, there's very few of them left at the moment. So Pecker Dunn was a Shanachí as well as a musician. And I'd actually like to share with you a story from one of the current most well-known Shanachís in Ireland, Eddie Lenehan. He also has a podcast, so if you like his stories, you can actually find more of his work. I'll look up the name of his podcast so that I'm getting it right, but he's very, very worth listening to. One of the things that I really appreciate about the way that Eddie Lenehan approaches his work as a Shanachí is that in many of his stories, he takes on a first-person perspective and moves between telling the story as a narrator and becoming the person within the story. And I think there's a power to that. So I'd like to share with you a story called The Fairy Bush. This is a story told by Eddie Lenehan, and he would have collected this from likely an older, an Irish elder, as an important piece of lore and mythology and history. So I'll take a listen to this, and I'll come back and talk with you a bit more in about 8 minutes. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is An Fuaim Mór, and we're listening to The Fairy Bush by Eddie Lenehan.
It is hard for people today to understand why, long ago, old people who very often had nothing wouldn't touch a thing like a fairy bush when they needed firing. Today, when we have everything, you know, and believe in nothing, we say, oh, yeah, well, they're crazy. Well, they're crazy. But they weren't. They weren't. They knew that if you did such a thing, there'd be consequences. Now, we might call them simple-minded. We might call them superstitious or call them what you like, but remember one thing. If they were to root up or cut down a bush like that, they had to do it by hand. Today, you can get a machine. It's all impersonal. You can get a chainsaw and you can have it done vroom, like that. Long ago, you couldn't do that. You had plenty of time to be considering it while you did it and to be thinking about the consequences. And there were consequences to things like that. Let me just give you an example from where I'm living in County Clare. I was told this by a man who saw this for himself. And he wasn't a stupid man. Very, very practical man. His brother was a ganger with Clare County Council, a road ganger. And it was in the early 1950s. They had a bit of road to straighten. The road, it was going like that. And now this was near the burn. So rock, rock, all the way. And the road was going like that. And they were asked to straighten it. Now, the reason was, I would think, that the council had a bit of money left over at the end of the season and they wanted to spend it. Because look, at that time, why would you want straightening a road? Traffic was light. Cars wouldn't be going very fast. There was no big lorries in that area. I think maybe some local landowner was getting a bit of money out of it. I don't know why, but they were straightening the road. And there was a big gang of men. Or maybe that was the reason. Men had to be kept working and they had families to feed. People were poor. Think of it, it was the 1950s, a very poor time in Ireland. A lot of people emigrating. These men wanted work. Now, his brother, John, was the ganger, a decent man, a man who wouldn't force anybody to work, but he'd get the work done. Now, the engineer came out, he told them what had to be done and how many yards had to be done per day. No bother. That was going to be done. John was going to see to it. And every so often, the engineer would come to make sure that the width of the road and the level of the road and everything was being followed. And it was. And on and on and on went the work slowly, because, like I said, it was all rock. Michael, no, his brother was telling me this. But a day came when Michael and John, they were living in the same house, they were two bachelors as it happened, they arrived on their bicycles. The gang was there. Work should have been started. But there were the men leaning on their shovels. Nothing happening. And John, the ganger, he says, "Men, what's wrong?" "That." "What's that?"
"That."
And there in front of him, a bush. A lone bush. A shgach, as we'll call it. A lone white thorn bush. And he says, "Well, shift it, men, shift it." None of them would touch it. And for the obvious reason that it was a lone bush. Now, Michael said, "We knew that too, but the problem was the engineer, he was going to be coming tomorrow. And if the engineer came, and if that bit of road wasn't built, well, would we be working the following day?" So he said, lads, now, you know what we have to do." He was a reasonable man, John, the ganger, and he cajoled them and he talked to them nice, but at the end of all the talk, "No, that's a fairy bush. We can't do that. We'll go this side, we'll go that side, but we're not going straight on." And eventually, he did what he wouldn't do. He threatened him. He wasn't a man for threats, because remember, they all knew each other. Every one of them knew each other. They were all neighbours. And he said, "Boys, look, I don't want to lose my job. And I don't want you to lose your jobs, but he's coming tomorrow. And if that bit of road isn't finished, we're all out of a job. So what'll it be? Huh?" Now, what'll it be? You know what he was saying, but he wasn't saying it. "I don't want to be the one that'll fire you, but somebody will do it." So he picked out two of them and he said, "Get the cross cut, or else." And he picked out... And they did. They got the cross cut, and he said, "Do it." Now, much against their will, and the other lads watching them, thinking, "Are they out of their minds?" I suppose he picked out the two men that maybe were weakest of the crowd of them, because there were some men there that would not do it, even if they were going to lose their job, and even if they had a big family, which some of them had. He picked out the two, and he says, "Lads, start." And the two men, they took up the saw, and everybody there now looking what was going to happen. Michael told me this, and he said they started into the bush, and he said they had only two cuts on the back of that bush. And he said, I saw it myself. It started to bleed. Now, when I heard the story from him, I thought, as any sane person would, you know, 'twas the sap, because the sap of some things would be red or pink. And I said that to him. But he said, "No, this flowed down along the bush itself, 3 or 4 inches. That," he says, "was blood." And he says, "Well, holy Christ," he says, "they threw the saw from them, out. It was a wonder somebody there didn't get the head cut off of them. They threw the saw from them." And he said, "Do you think that bush was touched after?" "No way. No way." He said, "They could lose their jobs, but they weren't going to lose their lives. That bush was left. And the road was left. And they told the engineer that. My brother told the engineer that," he said. "The road was left. That road went no farther." And he says, "If you don't believe me, check it for yourself." He told me where it was. "The road is grown weeds now, the rest of it that was to be built. Nothing. And the bush is still there. I went and looked at it, and you can still see the mark of the cross cut on the back of the bush. It's still there standing. Most of those men are dead now. Well, natural causes, but... I don't know what happened to the two men that cut it. I forgot to ask Michael that, and I should have asked him that at the time. Did any harm come to those same two men that tried to cut the fairy bush? But the fairy bush survived, just like the one at Latoon that they had to put the motorway around. There it is growing to this day. And a lot of the other fairy bushes that people have had tried to destroy, they'll survive. Whereas the people who try to do away with them, do they come to any good end? Usually not. Usually not. The fairies protect their own property no matter what.
Are you someone in recovery? Someone struggling with addiction or disordered eating? Or are you simply curious to explore your relationship to alcohol, drugs, and other types of addictive behaviors? The UBC Student Recovery Community is a safe space to connect with others. The SRC provides many types of support, such as drop-in hours, recovery meetings, one-on-one support, and even has a dedicated recovery lounge. The SRC supports all pathways of recovery, from harm reduction to abstinence and everything in between. You can learn more at recovery_UBC on Instagram. And you can also contact the community at src.recovery@ubc.ca. Remember, you're not alone.
Welcome to Lethal Refresh.
I'm Danny.
I'm B.
I'm Stuck.
I'm Jay.
Let's get lethal. Let's get refreshed. When it's darkest, we always attract the brightest people.
Baby, you a light. You shift my whole world to the right. Please listen to Lethal Refresh on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Nardor de Human Serviette and doo-doo-loo-doo.
Doo-doo! Thank you!
Lethal Refresh, every Monday, 12 to 1 p.m. New music every week.
Hello, hello. You are back listening to Unfum Mor on CITR 101.9 FM. We just listened to a story called The Fairy Bush that was told by Irish Shanachí, or traditional storykeeper, Eddie Lenehan, and it was filmed and collected by Jason O'Mahony. One of my favorite things about listening to the stories that and Eddie Lenehan shares, or really any Irish traditional story or folklore, is that there's so many layers to what these stories hold. And in that way, I think that they're very similar, and there's a cultural similarity between traditional Irish stories and folklore stories that would be carried forward by people like Eddie Lenehan and other Shanachís, and the oral histories and oral traditions that exist on Turtle Island. That same kind of depth of knowledge of understanding of place and culture and law and responsibility is contained within these stories in ways that are not always explicit. And before I keep going here, if you're wondering what the track is that we're listening to under my voice, it's by the Merry Wallopers and it's The Holy Ground, which felt vaguely appropriate based on the story we just heard together. So with the story that we heard from Eddie Lenehan about the fairy bush or the white thorn bush, there's a piece of that story that's a little bit missing if you're not Irish or you don't have the context for the meaning and power of the symbol of the white thorn bush culturally. So white thorn trees are a type of tree that is native to Ireland, as well as many parts of, I'm trying to think of a better word for this other than the British Isles. I guess the collection of islands that includes Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales. One of the things about this particular tree is that it blooms in May, which is a coinciding date with the Irish Festival of Beltane, or Beltane, if you're going to anglicize it, which marks the beginning of the summer. So it is connected to this change in season, and with that, it has a lot of folklore and knowledge and meaning associated with it. Whitethorn trees, and particularly lone whitethorn trees, that appear to have no other bush or shrub or tree around it, are deeply associated with fairies and the other world. So there's a lot of superstition around these trees and the protection of these trees. And the story that we heard from Eddie Lenehan shows that that knowledge has been continued and held in Irish people's cultural consciousness, that people were so resistant to cut down that tree. And this experience that the man had of taking his axe to the tree and seeing the tree bleed. Even Eddie Lenehan says, like, sure, as any sane person would say, I assumed it would be sap, but no, he said it was blood. So there's a suspension of disbelief or a willingness to understand that there are things in the world that we cannot understand. And those types of that understanding, that knowledge that we can't understand everything and that there is something else there, is contained within stories like the story of the fairy bush. The other part of this that really resonates for me when I listen back to these types of stories is that they also hold a thread of Irish identity in relationship to land and the non-human that is particularly, I guess, it's made very clear through these stories. When we're talking about, you know, Eddie Lenehan mentioned at the end of that there was another situation in which there was a whitethorn tree that an entire motorway was actually diverted to go around this tree. That's a true story. I believe he was actually involved in getting that motorway diverted so that this tree would not be cut down. But this passionate understanding of the importance of these trees on a spiritual, mythological, and cultural level also echoes an understanding that there is a deep link between Irish identity and culture and relationship to the land and the plants and the non-human. All right, so that's a bit about storytelling, Shana Keys and Eddie Lenehan. I'm going to push us over to some music because this was intended to mostly be a music episode while I get my footing as a host of this show. We're hearing a recap of Wexford by Pecker Dunn in the background at the moment. We listened to that track in its full form at the start of the show. But I'm gonna hit us with another Mary Walloper's track. So we're going to take a listen to The Knights the Guard Raided Only. And I will be back very soon. Please keep it tuned to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to An Fuaim Mór, and we'll be back in about 3 to 6 minutes. I might add another song in there. We'll see. But I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to find out yourself by continuing to listen.
You would travel to hear it for many a mile. I was drinking and laughing away all the while. Sure, I thought I was dead and in heaven.
One evening I've laid down to Crow Street, I strayed to a bar that's famous for doing the late trade in vodka and the whiskey and red lemonade. I'm on company that's kindly and jovial. The man from Canali put me at me ease, and he sat me down easy beside a big blaze. He poured me a pint and a half on that blaze, and another wee drop came from Oney. For an hour and a half I drank liquor so rare, you would swear it was brewed by the gods, I declare. out of nectars and honeys, and lotuses fair, and it freshly came over the border. At 11:30 I sadly prepared to return to my lodgings where I was raped. I packed up me bags, I was filled with dull care, and then only put in a big order. So the tiddlers relaxed and returned to their drinks, rejoicing that now they need not feel the pinch. Peter Short finished off the last eighth of an inch. He was sucking since 7:20. And the music began in an old-fashioned style. You would travel to hear it for many's a mile. We were laughing and dancing the way all the while. I thought I was dead and in heaven. There were lads there from Newry, the Rock and the Hank, and some came from Belfast that never went back. And more lived convenient to Carols and Blacks, and every man Jack's will and Porter. Some came from Hill Street and more from the Quay, some cross McGlen, patriots tearing away. In the scheme done and mind, they were all in the ray, and each one kept themselves in good order. A big dirty guard was out on the street, and passing the door, heard the music so sweet, and he kicked up his heels for to beat a retreat, and to summon up two of his cronies. They quickly returned to the scene of the crime, and they called on the company to fight or resign. Let them in, cried Pat Murphy, we'll only be fine. On the night that the guards raided Oney's, said the sergeant on entering, well, what's this I see, and why are so many on the spree? Could it be that at long last the country is free? Your conduct is most nefarious. Oh, the country's not free, then only did say, if you want to drink porter, like the rest you must pay. We'd stay here if we like, till the clear light of day. You know in Dundalk we're precarious. So the guards went around and they took all our names, and they struggle to spell with their feeble wee brains. And now some names in Irish, they made a great hymns, and more they abandoned forever. To the roof of Mulholland some quickly did climb, for to gaze on a bar at the scene of the crime, to watch the old guards making good overtime as they gathered the rest all together. He roast them high up on the ramp, the guard and the sergeant, the lad with the lamp, the dirty, mean, miserable, lousy low tramps from the bog that were dragged up so lowly. May they always see suffering and sorrow and pain. May their boots never fit and their belts never strain, if they interrupt such a grand evening again as a night that the guards raided Oney's. And may their motors all stand and their noses all run, and their necks now so red all turn green in the sun, and their teeth all turn black and fall out one by one. May starvation need to make them grow bony. May their arses all fester and drop to their heels, and their last dying minutes be tempered with squeals. May they dance forever the fastest of reels, with the devil for laden poor Oney.
Dublin Street, where the Lyle drums did beat, and those loving English feet, they walked all over us. And every single night, when me dad would come home tight, he'd invite the neighbours out with his chorus.
Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Tell her how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Killeshandra. Come let us hear you tell how you slandered great Parnell when you thought him well and truly persecuted. Where are the sneers and jeers that you loudly let us hear when our leaders of 16 were executed? Come out, you blackened hands, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Tell her how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Killeshandra. Come tell us how you slew them old Arabs two by two. Like the Zulus, they had spears and bow and arrows. How bravely you faced one with your 16-pounder gun, and you frightened them damn natives to the marrow. Come out, you blackened hands, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Tell her how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Killeshandra. Now the time is coming fast, and I think them days are here when each English Johnny and he'll run before us. And if there'll be a need, then our kids will say Godspeed with the verse or two of singing this fine chorus. Come out, you blackened hands, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Tell her how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Killeshandra.
Hello, we just heard Come Out You Black and Tans by the Wolf Tones, an absolute classic that I feel at this point most people in the world have some familiarity with. My mic's a little bit low. Sorry if I was a bit quiet there. Forgive me. There's many reasons to play that song. It's a classic. It's a lot of fun. But one of the reasons that I wanted to play it as a culmination to this show or this episode is that I want to be very clear. This is a very, very firmly anti-colonial show. And that's a really big part of what my hope is for what this show will become as a conversation space for people a part of or engaged with Irish diaspora, is what it means for us as diasporic people to connect with, understand, and be involved in our identities as Irish people, and to not fall into traps of white supremacy that tend to mythologize the Irish identity, nor allow ourselves to in that kind of trap of the white supremacist co-optation of Irish identity, allow ourselves to become more allied with the colonizers than the colonized. Ireland has a history as a colonized nation, and there's repercussions of that still taking place right now. There's so much more to get into, and I have to stop myself from getting into it because I have 5 minutes. But to be very clear, that's the goal of this show as a conversation space, is to talk about how we can circumvent and push away that co-optation of what it means to be an Irish person, that it's not even remotely about whiteness in any way. So with all that being said, I've got one more track to share with you all. This one is a bit of a joke. I was showing this song to my partner this morning because I was reminded for some reason of an experience I had on St. Patrick's Day in 2019, I believe, where my mom and I had gone to Meet at O'Neill's, which is an Irish sandwich shop slash kind of pub-like environment in North Vancouver on Lonsdale. If you want to support a small business, I highly recommend heading out to Meet at O'Neill's, M-E-A-T, Meet at O'Neill's. Wonderful place, wonderful people. We were there for St. Patrick's Day. It was one of the very few days of the year that they're actually open quite late. So we were in there, and the owner of the establishment was showing like a slideshow of images from Irish history on the screen, including images of the Troubles and images that were favorable to the IRA. And it really upset a British customer in the establishment, which there's a lot of reasons that that would exist. And I think that there's also reasons to be able to suspend your own fragility, I suppose, as in that case, a British person in an Irish establishment, to understand that there's a lot more going on here. But the phrasing of the, I guess the word or the mention of the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, is really, it's a hot button point. And I think because of that, it gets mythologized in an odd way in like young Irish people's kind of cultural interpretations. So we see like phrases that hold or would have held and still sometimes do hold very strong and intense political meaning becoming kind of colloquialized. So like the phrase of up the rah, which would be a phrase of support for the IRA, for example, getting thrown around very casually as kind of almost in a joking manner. And that also has to do with particularly in the Republic, in the Irish, the liberated Ireland, having most young people's understanding of like experiences with the IRA and what the Troubles really felt like and looked like being, it's very far removed for young people. They didn't immediately grow up in that context. The presence of the Troubles was less intense and less immediate in the Republic. So there's a lot going on there. So the song that I'm going to play for you, this is a really long preamble, so thanks for your patience. The song that I'm going to give you is a comedic song that plays with the way that phrasing has lost a lot of its context amongst young people. So it's called... It's called Up the Ra. It's by the Rubber Bandits, who are a comedic group. I'm going to say comedic over and over again, just in case this is misinterpreted in any way. And I think that there's cultural value to sharing this song because it is funny and also gets at the ways that meaning changes over time and across distance, I suppose. Pretty much everything that they say in this song is false. The whole point of the song is that it's a false representation of history and shows that disconnection that can happen. Okay, I'm also going to give a content warning. This song will contain profanity. If you're really not into listening to any profanity, I would recommend tuning back in about 7 minutes. The next show that we'll be on is Teachable Moments with Dork Rube. Duber? Adora? I don't know. I get emails and they from Dora and they're signed as Dork. So I don't know if that's how they host their show, but that's certainly how they email me. Anyways, all right. Without much further ado, this is Up the Ra by the Rubber Bandits. Again, this song is comedy and social commentary. It is not serious. Okay, let's take a listen. And if you need to email someone about it and share your thoughts, you can email programming@citr.ca. I will be back eventually. This was just a test episode, but I'm sure I'll be back. You'll hear from me soon. Slán. Sorry, I said that and then I realized you don't know what that means. Slán is goodbye. Slán.
Like this now, I want you to go up to the Nartwell next Saturday night, and I want you to take two of your best mates with you.
Yeah.
The car now is on the dock waiting for you, there's three guns in the boot of the car.
Alright.
And I want no messing. and I want you to blow away two paratroopers.
Yeah, we're going to give you a lesson now in Irish history. For over 300 years, the British Army have oppressed the Irish people. It all started with the Great Potato Famine of 1916. The English took our food. When we were too starving and too weak to fight, they stole the seven counties and Ulster. So Eamon de Valera rode to London on the back of a horse to punch the Queen into the jaw as a symbol. And she locked him in jail for 100 years, and he smeared his own shit on the wall and starved to death.
The rubber bandits are in the IRA.